this morning on the first four antiphones, which are those that is not verbal biblical, but spelled biblical in its sentence. To read it again. The wisdom became a source from the mouth of the Most High, reaching mightily from one boundary of the world to the other, and presently ordering all things, coming to teach us the way of truth. The sons and Christ. The wise guy, huh? How often have we heard remarks like that, sometimes addressed to us, and almost as a staple of TV melodramas. Our language is not biblical language. It's all full of sayings about the lack of wisdom, about fools, or other language, witnessing to our almost instinctive distrust of claims to wisdom, or at least witnessing to how elusive a gift it is. But our reading from Job just says, where shall wisdom be found? And certainly not on earthly ground, normally. We have some people who almost instinctively, when anyone has the temerity to disagree with them, call them small aleck, fools, or even worse language. And we have that good old expression, astonished, which is probably derived as an abbreviation of our Latin, from the Latin sapientia, which is the first word of the, to which the old antiphone is known as a death. But please note that the antiphone is addressed to wisdom. And in the written text, the W is capitalized. And the relative clause that follows is introduced by who. That is, wisdom here is not primarily a gift, some quality or circumstance, but it is primarily a person, a vow, that is, the incarnate word itself. Which in the words of the Book of Wisdom, although technically apocryphal, this point is fairly unbiblical target. The famous word says, while all things were in quiet silence, in the middle of the night, thy mighty word leaped down from his royal throne and became to our myth. And I think that's a beauty of wisdom as a name for Christ, for the second person of the Trinity, that I feel we have all but forgotten in our church life, but very much alive in the Eastern Church, as witness, for example, the name Hagia Sophia, Holy Wisdom, the name of that jewel of Byzantine architecture, the church in Istanbul, still a jewel, even though it's been a mass for centuries, and is today simply a museum. Or the quantum is beautiful, and of Sophia, wisdom, which reigned out in the middle of the Byzantine liturgy, when wisdom descends again upon man in the midst of the service to become one with us. And in contrast to that, for us in the West, I think, that our tendency to depersonalize and to intellectualize things were hardly familiar at all with our vocabulary. Maybe we shouldn't be surprised if we hardly use that vocabulary at all in our confessional dogmatic writing. Because after all, it's their business to talk about God, not to address language to God. But even if one sets to our hymnals, our liturgy, one notices how conspicuous by its absence nearly any apostrophization or personalization of wisdom is. And haven't we all but forgotten how centrally biblical that idea is? The common act is, of course, in Proverbs 8, the sequel of our lesson this morning, Job 28, describing how wisdom is the Father's master workman in the work of creation itself. And in one sense, Proverbs 8 is possibly the most famous messianic oracle of all. At any rate, a good share of the Christological controversies of the early church turned about that chapter in the Old Testament. But contrast today, I think that purpose is a little bit too long, as we are sure for children to recite on Christmas Eve. I dare say that even many of our clergy dare to be aware of its existence. I think the Hebrew word for wisdom, chokhmah, is feminine in gender. The Bible commonly personifies wisdom as a woman, a divine love itself. It was to be loved and embraced. Lady wisdom, who offers herself what she has to give, in contrast to the enticements and allurements of the loose woman. She says to the passerby, "My husband is gone and will not be back until the new moon. Come, let us take our fill of love. Stolen water is sweet, and bread eaten in secret is a present." And all of a sudden, the man follows her like an ox to the slaughter. And I say, bird into a snare, and does not know that her house is the way to show, that it will cost him his life. In the contrast to that, Lady Wisdom, too, stands in the marketplace, and the city walls at the entrance to the city, offering them what she can deliver, namely true wisdom, offering them, if you will, the cup of the Eucharist, which, as St. Augustine writes, yields forgetfulness, the former vain delight. Now, in less poetic language, less vivid, what that translates into is this, is that Christ still comes to us, and in a way only comes to us, in the still, in the dead of the night, not apart from our intellect, our consciousness, but certainly not only that way. How silently the wondrous gift is given. But it is still to this respect that Christmas is the children, that it yields a wisdom of the cross, that asks us to become fools for Christ, centering our careers around the foolishness of preaching, for the primary topic is the foolishness of the cross. The still comes in a mystical way, if you will, like a much maligned word among a Protestant. The Christ in us, after the Christ for us, of course, coming to us in both the spoken as well as the visible, edible word, if you will, of the Eucharist. Becoming in our mouth the sweetest honey, as it was to Ezekiel. Becoming like a burning fire within our bones, as it was to Jeremiah. Like the live, mystic core which cut Isaiah's lips and made them open to his message. And it seems appropriate that we use again this morning the ancient biblical symbolism of incense, with a twofold import. On the one hand, of the overpowering mystery of the Marian mysterium, of the awe-inspiring mystery of the Incarnation and of the Eucharist, of the real presence descending upon us as it did upon the tabernacle and upon the temple, the sweet fragrance of God's love in Christ, which alone enables our worship and makes it possible for God to smell in our solemn assembly, as Isaiah writes, and also in turn, of course, representing the essence of our sacrifice, of our thanksgiving in return for his inestimable gift to us. That is, if it's clear that wisdom is a he before it is an it, a giver without whose presence there is and can be no gift, then we realize that it's something that cannot really be taught, but as they say, it can only be taught. Not a matter of him who wrongs, but of God who shows mercy. A matter of rebirth, not of striving, that stands in no immediate direct proportion to the amount of theological jargon that we have crammed into our heads. We could modify Luther's famous datum a little bit. Educated devil, now all you have is an educated devil. And then one could say that you ordain a nut, and all you have is an ordained nut. Or if you will, give an MD, a PhD, a person out of DG, if you are a Lincolnship, and all you have is someone who all his life looks actually as he did at graduation with that stupid murderer coming forward and with a pastor dangling in front of his eyes. As you will, put a powerful power or all the beautiful, ritualistic vestments in the world on someone upon whom the wisdom from above has not really descended, and you never cover up the bottom weight underneath, certainly not before God, and possibly not before man either. We associate that lack of the presence of wisdom perhaps affecting with young people, but it's not absent from the old either, nor surely in the time that you have to say there's no fear at all fear. Sometimes it is, one doesn't have to look too far in order to see that embodied either. So maybe we begin to understand why the church in its wisdom may those sapientia, or wisdom, the first of the old evil things. Because without it we have nothing but wisdom. Without it we have the form of godliness, but without it, its substance. Without it perhaps we have human wisdom, general revelation, but only law, only judgment, not the life of the gospel. Without it, we still stand before God as naked as the day when we were born, and neither cared not cut, not cleansed with water, not rubbed with salt, not wrapped in traveling clothes, and he gave famous scripture. Our pure doctrine, our most famous, our most precious treasure, no longer unites and separates from heresy, but becomes a means to clobber somebody over the head, a means of suspicion of every bit of phraseology which is different from every liturgical prayer, and which is a little unfamiliar to us, automatically becomes now adiaphora, and so on. All of the terms in what some people call a cannibalism that all too often goes with orthodoxy. A wisdom, a love for truth, a cleverness indeed, but the first we ask of the gospel. And so our prayer to wisdom is, of course, indeed, a prayer for wisdom. Our prayer for justification is inevitably followed by a prayer for sanctification at the same time. The old antiphon expresses that in terms of the word prudence, and that's a good biblical word, it's also a good non-biblical word. The great danger that these two be confused, that the prudence which the gospel gives becomes simply another example of what we know from everyday life is common sense, of foresight, practical judgment, self-discipline, and all the rest. And these sanctified common sense does not come to that common sense, but really that it has more to do with common sense than it has to do with sanctification. If you think of amputations, you think particularly of something like incense. It well means to even think of applying something like that in our heavily Protestantized and secularized culture. You would probably associate incense with John Lennon and with Buddhism far more than they were with Moses and with the Christ. And of course, in a way, to things with far less far out in many devices of incense. And then, of course, to all kinds of things other than the physical matters also. But how easily that becomes confused with simply the archetypical PR concept, the full present sanity, and a patterns on the back, and nice nothing, and two cups instead of cups, three things, and all the rest, which connects to with the vision that comes down from the world. Sometimes less than ten. So let us also ourselves this morning earnestly join in the ancient prayer of the church in this first wonderful. That his wisdom may also come unto us, especially in this Advent season. That is, Christ himself into our hearts. That his spirit and glory may fill us as it did the tabernacle of old. That it may melt even our willful, stubborn, and foolish heart. That he may really be our God, Emmanuel, and that we may really be his people in the substance of the ancient covenant of promise. And that finally he may return at the hour of our death and bring us back to the realm of wisdom to that he came before creation. Where shall wisdom be found? Therefore, one of our Christmas hymns, your best on heavenly ground. that we were there, so that we were there. In the name of the Father, and of the Son,